you can start writing at any age, and you can publish a story. You can sell a story to the New Yorker. You can put something on Medium that's going to go viral and make you a ton of money. You can do that in your 60s and 70s and even your 80s.
This is Crow's Feet, a place where we ponder the question, are these our golden years or does aging just suck? Well, yes, getting older is not for the faint-hearted, but aging also brings wisdom and humor, a finely tuned perspective on life. In our podcast, you'll hear the voices of more than 300 writers who will inspire you and often make you laugh about this journey through life. Hi there, I'm Jan M. Flynn, your host for this episode of Crow's Feet, Life as We Age, where we focus on one of our Crow's Feet writers who has a unique perspective on the ups and downs, the challenges and opportunities, and often the quirks of our later decades. And I am especially excited because I get to be the host who introduces and interviews our guest for this episode, Roz Warren. You don't want to miss this, because while Roz wouldn't say so herself, she's kind of a big deal, and she's a blast to talk to. Roz is one of my favorite writers, not just on Crow's Feet, but on the entire Medium platform, thanks to her wit, her wisdom, and her irreverence. She's written for a lot of famous publications, including HuffPost, the Philadelphia Inquirer, and as she puts it, from the New York Times to the Funny Times. Roz's work has appeared in 16 Chicken Soup for the Soul collections, and she is the author of a truly delightful book based on her experience as a public librarian, with one of the best titles I've ever come across, Our Bodies, Our Shelves. Roz is also a writing coach and editor, so we're thrilled to have her here with us on Crow's Feet. Welcome, Roz.
Thank you, Jan. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, we're pleased to have you. And I know this is hardly your first rodeo in terms of being interviewed. You've been interviewed a lot, including live on the Today Show. Can you tell us how that came about?
That was unexpected. I had written an essay for the New York Times about the fact that at the age in my 50s, which is when I wrote the essay, I was more comfortable wearing a bathing suit than I'd been in my 20s when I really had a body to rock a Speedo. When I was in my 50s, I certainly didn't have that same body. And yet because of, you know, as you say, age, wisdom, whatever, I no longer cared, and I was perfectly comfortable. As long as my body was functioning and was working, I was thrilled to be in a bathing suit. It didn't bother me at all. And so that was such a crazy point of view that after the essay came out, it landed on the desk of a producer at the Today Show, and she said, well, we've got to have this woman. We have to have this woman come on the show and talk about this. So they invited me, and I said, sure, because at the time I thought, this is never going to happen. You know, I'm an obscure writer out of nowhere. They're not going to put me on the Today Show in front of 5 million people. And yet it did happen. And, you know, I was on the show, and that was a really interesting experience to be live in front of 5 million people. And it was the kind of thing that, you know, when you're in your 50s, you don't really think something like that's going to happen to you. You figure if you're going to be on the Today Show, it's going to be, you know, in your 20s or 30s when you're young and happening. And this is like, that was the right time, and I was there, and I had a wonderful time. It was terrifying and wonderful at the same time. I was interviewed by Savannah Guthrie, who was terrific, and it was a wonderful experience.
I don't know that I ever rocked a Speedo, but I too feel better in a bathing suit now because, you know, who's looking? And what I love about that article is that it could only be written by somebody who's got a few decades under their under their tankini. So because, you know, sometimes aging is an opportunity. And I had a great time reading your book, Our Bodies, Our Shelves. I can't say that title enough. Could you give us a quick overview of what that book's about?
When my son was born, I was an at-home mom. And then when he was in school, I had some time. And I decided rather than going back to the practice of law, I wanted to start working in my local public library because that would keep me in the community. It would keep me accessible in case he needed me. I could be there when he came home from school. It's a decision that a lot of mothers, working mothers, make. So I applied for a job at my local public library, and I got it, and I just loved working at the library. And I also realized it gave me terrific material to write about. I've ended up with several books with material. I ended up writing essays for, again, all the places I usually write for, and writing about your interactions with people and the ins and outs of library work. And there's a lot of conflict. There's a lot of tension. People think of libraries as quiet places where nothing ever happens, but everybody is welcome at a library. everybody comes in and everyone's there together. And to see how people behave and how they interact and what happens on a day-to-day basis is just fascinating. So it gave me so much good material that I just ended up writing essay after essay just about my basic experience working in a library. And I ended up with enough material to publish two books. One is Our Body, Our Shelves, and the other is called Just Another Day at Your Local Public Library. And they've both done quite well.
And if someone wants to get a hold of either book, they can find it, hopefully, at their public library, right? Or it's available on Amazon or, you know, the Big A, or at bookstores, right? If you order it?
Yeah, you can certainly get your hands on it. And I've been told many times of people going into their local public library and asking if the librarian can get them a copy, and then it ends up being purchased.
You know, I don't think that people realize necessarily that when they borrow a book from the public library, it's helping the author just as much as if they bought it. So authors love libraries.
Working at my library, I could look at the stats. Every copy of Our Bodies, Our Shelves was read by 50 or 60 people.
So your work also appears on Crow's Feet on Medium. And one of your recent essays is one that I'm sure will resonate with a lot of our readers and listeners because, you know, a lot of us have hit some road bumps on the matrimonial path or even hit the end of the road.
Well said.
Would you share that piece with us?
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. Thank you for asking me. It's called I Recycled My Husband. And the subtitle is I Have No Regrets. I was Rick's second wife. We were together for 20 years. I'm sad that our marriage went south, but it deserved to. We had no business tying the knot in the first place. Rick wasn't the right husband for me. That wasn't his fault. There is no right husband for me. Although the saying goes that there's a lid for every pot, I'm one of those women who ought to stay single. Neither lid nor pot. I'm more of a single function standalone appliance, like an espresso maker, a solo act. In my heart, I always knew that. But my biological clock betrayed me. The moment I saw my sister's newborn baby 4 decades ago, I knew that I wanted a baby too. The emotional tidal wave that was my sudden longing for motherhood drowned out the sensible voice in my head that whispered, "You're making a big mistake," as I proposed marriage to my boyfriend. That's right, I proposed. So you could say that our bad marriage was my fault. On the other hand, he said yes. Nobody who knew me as well as Rick did had any business accepting a marriage proposal from me. He knew all of my flaws. I knew all of his too, as did most of our friends and family. When the fellow who married us asked if anybody knew of a reason why we shouldn't be joined in holy matrimony, everyone should have jumped up asking, "Are you kidding us? Where do we start?" Nora Ephron once said, "Never marry a man you wouldn't want to be divorced from." Based on this criterion, our marriage was a resounding success. Otherwise, not so much. The early years were good. For two people who were so mismatched, we had some terrific times together. And judging from the result, we did a terrific job of raising our son. I wasn't much of a wife, but I'm a good mother. And Rick was and is a good father. But as a loving couple, we were a disaster. So after plenty of suffering and some very necessary therapy, I finally kicked him to the curb. Luckily, one woman's trash is another woman's treasure. Rick put up his profile on Match.com. Before long, he found somebody. They went out. They fell in love. Finally, the lid to his pot. He couldn't light up my life, but he swept her off her feet. And she was just what he needed. Everything fell right into place. The next thing I knew, they'd gotten hitched. Do I have any regrets? Are you kidding me? I couldn't be happier. The way I look at it is that I've successfully recycled him. When you pull the plug on a relationship that endured for 2 decades, even if it shouldn't have, you can't help but feel guilty. So Rick's remarrying was a big relief. Now that my first husband is happily married to his third wife, I can fully accept my share of the blame and admit that the whole thing was a huge mistake. These days, Rick and I get along fine. The things I most enjoyed about the man I married, his intelligence, his acid sense of humor, his tender heart, and his general feistiness, are all things that I can still enjoy. And we both enjoy our 3 wonderful grandsons. What I've learned is that there's some men who are a lot better when you aren't married to them than when you are. Rick was never the right husband for me, but 20 years later, he's a terrific ex-husband. If you happen to be trapped in a bad marriage yourself, take my advice and get out. If not for your own sake, then for your husband's. It's the only way he's going to find that terrific next wife he so richly deserves. Do the poor guy a big favor. Take him to the cleaners today.
I love that story. Thank you so much, Ross. And I love the way you read it.
Thank you.
It's another story that could only come from a seasoned perspective. It takes some time to be that wise and that generous, really.
Oh, thank you.
Well, that's true. And you've been working on your craft for a long time. And you also offer your services as an editor and a writing coach. And I know you've done a lot of that work. And a lot of our listeners are writers, or they're interested in writing and maybe thinking about taking the plunge. So I hope you'll tell us something about your editing and your coaching.
I would love to. I've been working with writers for decades now. I used to edit anthologies for a variety of different publishers. So when I was editing these anthologies, I ended up working with lots and lots of writers, because anything that's submitted to you for an anthology does need some reworking and trimming and recrafting. So I got into the habit of doing that. And then I just expanded that into doing that as a business. So what I do is basically I bill myself as an editor and writing coach. I work one-on-one with writers to help them improve and publish whatever they're writing. And I work with people who basically have contracts with Random House, and I work with people who basically don't have contracts with anybody and have never written a word and just want to get started, often in retirement. Often people who have basically had wonderful careers in other fields, or have raised children, or both, and they've always wanted to write. They've always thought, I have a book in me, or they start to think, I could write, you know, some essays or short stories. At any level, you can always use an editor to encourage you, to help you, to support you, to help your writing get better, to work with you on what works, and just as important, you know, what doesn't work, so that you can just become better at what you're trying to do. And I've been doing this now for decades, and it's a joy to work with people. One of my clients just sold his first young adult novel to Penguin for six figures. And of course, I'm thrilled about that.
Wow.
Well, I know. I'm just as thrilled about the people who have reached out to me on Medium, and they say, the one woman in particular said, I have an essay I'm writing about my grandmother. I'm not a professional writer. I don't want to sell this to anybody. I just want this to be as good as it can be, because I want it. This is written about someone who meant so much to me that I want it to be as good as it possibly can be. And I helped her write it. It ended up being a terrific essay. She posted it on Medium. It was immediately picked up for distribution. It's done very well. So that's just as important as selling your work to, you know, everybody has a writing goal that they can reach. Everybody needs a good editor. And that's basically what I'm here for, among other things.
You're listening to the Crow's Feet podcast from the pages of Medium.com. And we're talking to Ross Warren, a prolific writer, editor, and writing coach. So what would you say would be an advantage and or a challenge to being a writer with some years under their belt? You know, what's helpful? What's maybe an obstacle about that?
Two different things. The bad thing is that basically it takes, you know, the conventional wisdom is it takes 10,000 hours to become spectacular at your craft. When you're in your 60s or 70s, you don't have 10,000 hours necessarily. The later you start at something, the more challenging it's going to be. You know, on the other hand, the flip side of that is that you know who you are and what you have to say at our age in a way that you just didn't when you're in your 20s and 30s. And you also have a sense of you're not going to waste your time. So the people I work with, my youngest client is a 17-year-old girl who's writing a terrific fantasy series. My oldest client is probably an ex-ad man in his 70s. And when you get to this age, you know so much, you've been through so much, you have such a wealth of experience to draw on, which isn't to say that she can't use her imagination to imagine being all sorts of different kinds of people and having all sorts of different life lessons. But he knows something, given how long he's lived, all the encounters he had, all of the experience that he's had, that she can't yet. She just can't. So you've got a wealth of experience. You've got an accumulated, you know, just the stuff that's happened to you is interesting. If you've lived any kind of life, you've got interesting material. And you've got the perspective. And often you've got the money that you don't have to hire an editor when you're in your 20s and 30s. You've also got the time, usually. The kids are great, you know, raised, and you often are retired. You've got the time, you've got the money, you've got the focus, you've got the need to do it. You've got a spectacular amount of material. So you're in a great position. A lot of my clients are in their 60s and 70s, and they're doing great work. But of course, as we all know, when you're in your 20s and 30s, you've got the energy.
and the words come really quickly, right?
They may not be the right words, but you know, you've got a whole lifetime to learn how to do it better. So it's a balance. It's just a balance. There's no time in your life. I've known a lot of dancers, for instance. You can teach dance past a certain age, but you cannot get up on that stage in your 70s and be a ballet dancer, for instance. I mean, it just doesn't happen. You can start writing at any age, and you can publish a story. You can sell a story to the New Yorker. You can put something on Medium that's going to go viral and make you a ton of money. You can do that in your 60s and 70s and even your 80s. So why not?
That is really encouraging and really exciting. And that gives me a blast of energy. I'm thinking it will for our listeners as well. So how does somebody who's interested in working with you get hold of you?
You email me. And my email is roswarren@gmail.com. That's the easiest way to get through to me, because I don't have a website about my editing services, because I started this in the 80s. And this was before there were websites. And I get all of my clients from word of mouth at this point, and for doing things like this and interviews like this. So I don't really need a website. And I've never gotten one. So that's how you get in touch with me. Or they can certainly, you know, try to get through to me on Medium. Medium doesn't make that very easy, of course. So just email me. That's the easiest way to do it. It's drop me a line. I'm very responsive. I'll get right back to you. I charge $75 an hour, which is very affordable. And these days, what I've been doing a lot of, which is a lot of fun, is encouraging people, just buy an hour of my time, and we can work on whatever you want. We can troubleshoot. I can give you advice about marketing, about Medium. We can just anything you need to know. And that's worked out very well. And that's also just a lot of fun. And for people that are thinking, oh, what do I, you know, do I want to, you know, 1 hour, it's not a big deal.
Oh, it's cheaper than a day of golf. And
it's a lot less frustrating if you're having a bad day.
That's true. And it sounds to me like if you're going to embark on writing, it's wonderful, but it's not necessarily easy, and it's certainly worth the investment. So again, it's Roz Warren, R-O-S, mm-hmm. right? R-O-S is in Sam, warren@gmail.com. That's how to get a hold of you.
Sure.
You know, it is so fascinating to talk to you. I seriously could do it all day, but we have a little bit of a short runway here. Mm-hmm. But luckily, our listeners can find you. They can find your writing on Crow's Feet on medium.com, as well as elsewhere on the Medium platform. They can subscribe to you there. And people, you really need to look for Roz Warren's Our Bodies, Our Shelves. And the follow-up book is Another Day at Your Public Library. What's the title of that one?
Just Another Day at Your Local Public Library.
Just Another Day at Your Local Public Library. Really worthwhile. And people, order it from your local library and you'll make Roz especially happy. And look for her essays in 16 of the Chicken Soup for the Soul collections. So, Roz, one last question as we wrap up. What's one thing you would say to somebody who has wanted to write their whole lives, but who's afraid it's too late?
It's never too late. And what I'm saying is, if you are sitting there listening to this and you've always wanted to write, when this is over, go to the keyboard and just start. Once you start, you're a writer. So just do it. There's no reason why you shouldn't.
That's wonderful. Once you start, you're a writer. I'm going to take those words with me. Thanks so much, Roz. It has been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I love Crow's Feet, and I'm thrilled that Crow's Feet is starting a podcast. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Thank you. Today's episode was produced by me, Jan M. Flynn. Our guest was writer, coach, and editor Roz Warren. Our executive producer is Nancy Pakenham. Editing and sound design by Rich Halton, with support from our Crow's Feet team, Betsy Allen, Kathy Dunn Gilbert, Nancy Franklin, Warren Turner, and me, Jan M. Flynn. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Crow's Feet, Life as We Age. Don't miss any of our great stories. Subscribe to Crow's Feet wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to tell your friends and family to give a listen to and leave a rating or review. You can read more Crow's Feet stories online at medium.com/crows-feet. And check back next month for a new episode. So till next time, wherever you are in your writing journey, remember the inspiring mantra from Roz Warren.
When this is over, go to the keyboard and just start. Once you start, you're a writer.